This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to the basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success, so you know something, I can really do this.
We just beat the damn game. Yeah!
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Jason Staples. You can find me on Twitter, at Doc Staples. And don't forget, you can subscribe to this podcast through iTunes or your podcast manager of choice. You can also find us on Seminole Sports Radio from VSporto and listen on your mobile devices via the Seminole Sports Radio app, available on iTunes or the Android Marketplace. And if you've been enjoying this podcast, please rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The more the merrier. Help us help you. And a bit of a belated podcast today as we look back at Florida State's 27-0 win over Florida in Gaines. I can hear the Florida fans in the background demanding that they be credited with the 2 points that the Florida State offense scored on their behalf, since Florida's offense was too inept to score any points in this game. Yes, that is true. That is true. It was not 27-0. Yes, the Florida offense did not score a point. So yes, I think it's only fair that we make sure that it's only right that we make sure that we account for the 2 points that Florida State scored for them. A game that more or less matched up with what we more or less expected, with what this podcast projected. I thought that this game would match up pretty closely with, it would look very similar to the 2011 Florida State-Florida game, where that Florida State won 21-7. Again, the Florida offense being completely shut down in that 2011 game. The only reason that Florida scored 7 points in that game was a late fumble by Jermaine Thomas as Florida State was trying to run out the clock in the fourth quarter, that gave Florida the ball inside the 20-yard line and gave them a chance to put some points on the board there and avoid the shutout. And this game was very similar. The Florida offense was just flat-out inept, was unable to do anything of real consequence against the Florida State defense. And, you know, this was going to be a game that was going to be heavily dependent on field position and turnovers as long as Florida didn't get short fields. I said this in the pregame, I didn't see how Florida would score against this Florida State defense unless Florida State really put them in position to do so with field position or turnovers or whatever. And that's exactly what we saw in this game. And first things first, all hail Big Game Beatty.
All hail!
Cason Beatty, praise be unto him, will henceforward be paid special honor on this podcast. Whenever Big Game Beatty, praise be unto him, will be mentioned on this podcast, he will receive, as I said, special honor, whether that be a short pause for reflection or some sort of honorific. Because let's be honest, Cason Beatty, for a long time, for the better part of his career at Florida State, was as maligned a player as any at Florida State. I mean, this is a guy that doesn't even, much maligned, doesn't even begin to approximate the way that Beatty was criticized going back to, particularly to 2013 in that national championship year, where he was roundly criticized as the only weak link on that national championship team, and to a large degree he was. You look at that roster across the board, 22 starters from that team in the national championship game are going to be playing in the NFL as of next year. And then of the two specialists, you're going to have Roberto Aguayo also kicking in the NFL. And then you've got Cason Beatty. Praise be unto him. When you look at that roster, he comes off as the weak link. But here's the thing: when it came down to performance that year, Florida State never punted during the regular season. I mean, you go down the list. They set the record for the most points scored by any team, and they did that without running a hurry up offense, without running a fast tempoed offense. So I mean, they just never punted. I mean, going down the list of the punts that year, the most they punted in any game was at Wake Forest 6 times. And the rest of the year, they didn't punt more than 4 times in the regular season. But then, when it came time for the Auburn game, that was a game where they punted 6 times, and those were crucial punts because that was a close game. It was the one time where it really mattered, punting-wise, and all of a sudden, Cason Beatty, praise be unto him, 6 punts for an average of 42.83 yards per punt, and a high-quality hang time. You know, they did a great job covering in that game because Cason Beatty, praise be unto him, punted very well. And had he not punted well, Florida State may not have won that game. Little did we know that was the first indication, that was the first sign of big game Beatty. And ever since that game, whenever Florida State has really been in trouble, when there's been a close game that really depended on field position, you're looking at a guy who, yeah, he didn't punt all that well in other games at times. But last year, the Clemson game, without Jameis Winston, against the nation's number one defense, a game that really did depend a ton on field position, Florida State wins 23-17. Big game Beatty. 8 punts, an average of 40.38, put Florida State, and several of those that flipped the field, actually, put Florida State in position to be able to force Clemson to drive the whole field, and that was, again, a big difference in that game. Clemson lost the field position battle because of big game Beatty and his ability to flip the field in that game. And when you start going down the list in 2014, averaged 42 yards a punt against Notre Dame, 45 yards a punt against Louisville, 48 yards a punt in a reasonably close win against Virginia. That Boston College game that ended on a last-second kick, only 2 punts, but an average of 49 yards per punt. And then again, in another game that was critical for Florida State to put themselves in good field position, to put the defense in better field position against Georgia Tech, against that high-powered Georgia Tech offense in the ACC Championship game, 2 punts, 42 yards apiece. And the same thing carried over to 2015. I'm starting to wonder. You got to wonder at this point, has Cason Beatty, praise be unto him, been sandbagging this whole time?
Sandbagging, son of a...
Has he really just been playing Florida State's competition so that the better teams can count on getting great field position, and then all of a sudden they come in and he's booming kicks? Just booming kicks in the games that matter. Boston College this year, 7 punts for an average of 52.29 yards per kick. That's kicking the cover off the ball. Miami, the next closest game Florida State's had this year after, you know, in that run. Miami wins, you know, the win 29-24. 3 punts, an average of 48.33 yards per punt. Georgia Tech, yes, Florida State lost that game, but not because of big game Beatty. 4 punts, an average of 50 yards a punt. At Clemson, another game Florida State lost, not because of big game Beatty. 6 punts, an average of 44.17. And then finally, at Florida, a game that even though Florida State won going away, and Florida State did win going away, that game was closer through 3 quarters, and one of the reasons that Florida State was able to win that game going away was because big game Beatty kept putting Florida's offense in a position where they had to drive the whole field. 7 punts, 333 yards, an average of 47.57 yards a punt. Those are NFL punting numbers, guys and girls. 47.57 yards per punt. Florida had to drive the whole field the entire game. And when that Treon Harris-led Florida offense had to drive the field against Florida State's defense, they got dominated. Florida State dominated that game up front in particular. The Florida State defensive line just dominated. They won the game at the point of attack. Florida couldn't run the football, and they, you know, with Treon Harris, they couldn't throw it. There were a few occasions where plays were there to be made against Florida State secondary. One play where Javion Elliott fell down on a flag route, just a great pressure from up front, and Treon Harris couldn't make the throw. Another play where there's a miscommunication, you know, there was a different coverage being played by Jalen Ramsey and the linebacker than what was going on with LaMarcus Brutus in the secondary. You could see this is on Florida's first drive. You could see that Florida State in the secondary wasn't quite sure of what they needed to do against that look, and there was a lot of communication going back and forth, and then there was a miscommunication after the snap. Callaway was wide open down the field, and Treon Harris couldn't make the throw, partly because, again, he had some pressure in his face, and partly because he's not an SEC or ACC level quarterback. Maybe an SEC level quarterback, now that I think about it. Now that I think about the level of quarterback play in that conference, maybe Treon Harris is an SEC level quarterback, but he certainly is not an ACC level quarterback. Not a top-level ACC-level quarterback, and that's why, you know, they weren't able to capitalize in that case. And that was really the best chance that Florida had to score all day, was on that Callaway-busted coverage up the sideline, and when Florida was not able to take advantage of that, that was it. That was really all they got the rest of the game. There was another opportunity where Derwin James got turned around by Callaway in the end zone on a third down play, or maybe second down play. But again, Harris was pressured. It would have been a little bit more difficult throw. It's the kind of throw that you would expect a pro quarterback or a top-level college quarterback to make. But again, a tougher kind of throw for an average or below-average quarterback, and that's what Florida State was playing in this game. And they knew that. And you got to give another guy who was maligned quite a bit last year, Charles Kelly, a lot of credit. This was a dynamite defensive plan in this game. And you know, here's an interesting thing. Given how Florida State looked over the past few weeks defensively since Terrence Smith's return against Clemson and Nate Andrews getting back healthy and getting on the field shortly thereafter, played a little bit against Clemson. Given the way that the Florida State defense, given how Florida State's defense has looked since then, I got to ask the question. If Trey Marshall and Terrence Smith had not gotten hurt earlier in the year, is Florida State undefeated right now? I know that's kind of a crazy question because this is a very flawed Florida State team. I mean, a very young Florida State team. But here's the question. With Trey Marshall not getting hurt and with him staying at the star position, and with Terrence Smith staying healthy at the linebacker position, because he's played like a borderline All-American at different points in this year. I mean, he had some busts against Florida, but overall, the stability that he's brought, particularly in pass coverage at that linebacker position, has been night and day from what Florida State was getting from the linebacker position before. If Terrence Smith and Trey Marshall had been on the field and healthy the entire year, is Florida State undefeated? I think that's worth asking at this point. Now, you know, football is all about you have to deal with injuries. You have to deal with that stuff. So in some sense, playing these, you know, what if games are stupid. But I do wonder. Because the thing that Florida State's able to do, now that Nate Andrews is back on the field a little bit more, the thing that Florida State's been able to do is they've been able to move Derwin James around like they'd planned to do from the beginning of the year. And he is a wrecking ball on long yardage situations. I mean, what he did to the Florida right tackle on that pass rush to cause a hurry of Treon Harris was just silly. You just don't see safeties doing that, let alone true freshman safeties. I mean, that's just silly. And that guy would have been on the field in that role all year if Trey Marshall had not gotten hurt. But instead, he had to get pushed into other roles. And then when Nate Andrews got hurt in addition, and then also you had for a while Tyler Hunter hurt as well, and Hunter being able to take that safe, that deeper safety spot when James moves forward was key. Had those injuries in the back, you know, had, say, Trey Marshall been able to stay at star all year, you could add Javion Elliott at the back safety or when Tyler Hunter got hurt, or, you know, you could have moved some other things around. But had Trey Marshall been able to stay healthy at the star position, you're able to move Derwin James around like that and still use him in those cases, which they were not able to do once Trey Marshall got hurt. That's number one. Number two is, in terms of their ability to stop the run off the edge and Marshall's capacity in pass coverage and also his capacity to rush the passer from that position. I mean, you got to remember, going back to the Miami game and the Louisville game, Florida State gave up over a yard per play more after Marshall went out against Miami and over a yard per play more after Marshall went out against Louisville. That's how much of a difference he made to the defense in those games. I mean, there was a clear before and after with Trey Marshall before and after he got hurt or before he got ejected against Miami and before and after he got hurt against Louisville. Huge difference without Trey Marshall. What ended up happening is that Florida State's defensive staff had to go back and they had to shuffle around personnel and find ways to plug those gaps. And unfortunately, a couple of the guys that could have potentially filled some of those gaps earlier among the young talent, Marcus Lewis and Tavares McFadden, both of those guys got dinged up as well early in the year. So they were not really available. They weren't really ready to go at that midpoint in the year. So they wound up having to find other ways to work guys into different roles. And I got to give this defensive staff a ton of credit for finding ways to maximize what they could do with the personnel that was on the field. I mean, Javion Elliott's 175, 180 pounds, and teams really didn't find ways to take advantage of him with him at the star position. You got to give a lot of credit to Charles Kelly and that defensive staff for finding ways to maximize what they could get out of their talent. And then once Terrence Smith got on the field and they felt like they could cover more at that linebacker spot, and once they started getting Nate Andrews back and they could go six defensive backs, seven defensive backs at times, and use Derwin James as that extra linebacker, then things got really interesting. Because before, when Terrence Smith was off the field, they couldn't do as much of that stuff because they would just get smoked in underneath coverage against the linebackers. But with him on the field, you can go ahead and let Derwin James loose because you're not as worried about somebody just beating you, you know, getting big plays because you don't have somebody underneath that can cover. And without this is something we talked about earlier in the year. Once Nate Andrews and Terrence Smith got hurt, those were your two best underneath defenders in the dime package in particular. Those are your two guys that you count on at those more or less linebacker spots. Andrews going into that money spot, which is basically the Will linebacker. That made a big difference in terms of what Florida State was able to do coverage-wise. Both of those guys are back on the field in this game, and you could see in terms of the level of creativity that Florida State was able to put on the field, was able to scheme up for this Florida defense, what a difference that made. And Florida State used more stunting in this game as well than they had all year. That's something else that I noticed. And I think that had to do with the fact that Florida's offensive line is just not as good as some of the other offensive lines that they played. And they didn't think that they would get gashed as much in the running game as the extra pressure that they might create with those stunts. And I think by and large, they were right. They were able to create a tremendous amount of pressure on Treyon Harris without giving up a whole lot of plays, and you know that without giving up much in the running game, and again, that's partly because you've got guys in the second level that you can count on when the running back actually does find a little bit extra of a seam because you've opened it up with a stunt. In any case, Florida State's defensive tackles dominated this game, And maybe the most encouraging thing about this is that it wasn't just the first team defensive tackles that were able to eat a little bit in this game. Florida State was able to get redshirt freshman Fred Jones on the field at defensive tackle, and he had a tackle for loss. Now, I will say that when Jones and Christmas and Rick Leonard, who also got a lot of action in this game, he actually got most of the reps at defensive end that Giorgio Newberry had gotten earlier in the year in this game, and I thought he played well. But when those three were on the field together, and they got almost two drives worth of snaps on the field together, which is, again, a really good sign going into next year in terms of depth. But when those three guys were on the field together, that was actually when the majority of Florida's offensive yardage happened. Tran Harris made one big throw because he got a little bit more time, and then there were a couple runs by Taylor where space was created when those guys were on the field. They're not quite there at the level that Florida State starters are, but the drop-off was not huge. And Christmas has played well all year. But Derek Nnadi was a grown man in this game. He dominated on the inside. So did Niall Lawrence-Stample. And DeMarcus Walker continues to be probably the most improved player on this Florida State team over what we saw last year. Tremendous play from DeMarcus Walker. He's a guy that has gone from maybe a free agent type player to a guy that more than likely at this point is in the higher mid round range when it comes to the NFL draft. And if he stays another year and continues to progress a little bit, you're looking at a guy that could work his way up, you know, into the second round area, because, you know, he moves so well at that, and maybe even higher than that, because he moves so well at that size. I mean, he's 270 plus pounds, and, you know, four teams that play 3-4 type looks in the NFL or teams that need a strong side defensive end that can hold up at the point of attack. You know, he's a guy that could be interesting. He's a guy that NFL teams may look at and say, well, you know, we might want to put another 15, 20 pounds on him and put him in a 3 technique. Who knows? But he's really improved. But it was a very good scheme from Charles Kelly in this game, using James as a spy and using him as an extra rusher anytime that you were in a passing situation, that Florida was in a passing situation with Tran Harris, and Tran Harris was not running away from him. And again, go ahead and start enjoying it now because Florida State fans, you're not going to get more than another 2 years out of Derwin James as long as he stays healthy. This kid's going pro, and he's going pro early. So we're going to go ahead and take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about the other side of the football in a moment. So on the offensive side of the ball, my initial watch, I was not a big fan of what Jimbo Fisher came out doing on the offensive side. But after watching it a second time, after going through and spending more time looking at the plays and breaking down what happened on each play, I was wrong on my first watch. I think actually it was a pretty good game plan. If anything, and, you know, going back to what I was thinking out of the gate, if anything, sometimes Jimbo will have a tendency to give a little bit too much respect to a really top quality defense. He'll see how good they are on tape in game planning, preparation, that sort of thing. And particularly in big games, we've talked about this, that Fisher always keeps tendency breakers and lots of stuff in the bag for big games against Clemson and against Florida in particular, but against Miami. Those games, he always has some extra stuff, some nice wrinkles in there to take advantage of basically those defenses being keying on what Florida State's tendencies are. And he generally does a great job with that. But sometimes I feel like Florida State can be gamed out of their base stuff or gamed out of doing what they do best because Fisher will show a defense too much respect. I thought actually against Northern Illinois in the bowl game some years ago, that was an example where there were some times where Florida State checked into some pass plays, and that wasn't really just Fisher, that was EJ Manuel checking into some pass plays and things. against an eight-man front when they probably just should have run the ball. Because, you know, Northern Illinois couldn't stop them against the run. And there are times where sometimes you can game Fisher into doing what you want. And I thought on a first watch that maybe that was the case in this game. And like I said, on a second watch, I don't think it was the case. I think that they came in with a very good plan. I think that they understood that their defense was such, and we talked about this in the preliminary podcast, Florida State knew going in that their defense was such that, and Florida's offense was so inept that Florida would have trouble scoring as long as they didn't put the ball on the ground, as long as they didn't throw interceptions. But at the same point, Florida State was not just going to run all over Florida's defense either. So they knew that, and what they did is they set up a lot of shot play type opportunities. They tried to run Dalvin Cook early, but Florida State was just getting beat up front, particularly on that right side. The right side did not have a good first half in particular. Chad Mavetti at right tackle in particular was having a really, really hard time blocking Jonathan Bullard and whoever else was over top of him on reach blocks in the running game. He just couldn't get across him. He's just too big. He's too slow at this point, and he can't make that block. This is where it's going to be imperative that either he drops a ton of weight and gets into shape in the offseason, or Florida State gets what they need to get out of that right tackle position, either from Rubel growing and into his paws, as you might say, or Derek Kelly getting healthy and stepping in, because Derek Kelly was the best right tackle for Florida State this year. But that's the only real question mark up front for Florida State next year. They're going to have to make sure that right tackle position gets handled well. They should have good options for that after this year. All these players should be mature enough and physically at the point that they need to be able to do that at right tackle next year. But they were not in this game with basically their third option at right tackle. In this game with Mavetti there, he just wasn't good enough early on, in particular, to make some of those reach blocks against what Florida was throwing at him. And there were some other cases where I thought Florida's odd front looks gave Florida State's offensive line trouble in terms of communication. So what I mean by odd front, for those of you who are less familiar or newer to the podcast, odd fronts are odd number of down linemen. And Florida played a lot of odd fronts. They played a lot of three-man lines in this game. And what that does is that it depending on how the odd front players are aligned, it can change your blocking assignments for the offensive line. It does change your blocking assignments, but it can confuse them a little bit because you're not sure necessarily what linebacker is going to be in what gap, and different things like that can change. And there were times where I thought that the Florida State offensive line, and again, particularly on that right side, just they weren't sure who they had. There were a couple places where, and also it happened, you know, to Kareem R. At one point, R. had the responsibility of pulling through, and taking the first, taking a linebacker who would show in a gap to lead Dalvin Cook. And he just misidentified who the Mike linebacker was in that case. He was going to come around and take that linebacker, and he misidentified him. Actually ran right by him to a safety, and that linebacker ran right by R to make the tackle at the line of scrimmage. And what we saw is that stuff happened a bunch early. And again, this is a young You know, you hear people say this is not a young offensive line. This is the end of the year. By now, they've had lots of experience. That would be the case if you'd had even close to the same lineup all year. But, you know, R has been out about, what, a third to half the year. Mavetti has played three different spots on the offensive line. Wilson Bell's been in and out. You're on your third center. It's been a very, very different. You've had nine different players play. Start a game on the offensive line, or I think it's what, nine different lineups on the offensive line over the course of the year. So it's hard for the line to get used to communicating, to get used to things at the spot that they're in. And there were times where I think that was obvious in this game. But I think over the course of the game, they started to get a little bit more comfortable. They started to figure out, okay, he can't make this block. You know, we can't ask Mavetti to make this particular block. We'll, and you could see that schematically they made a couple changes in terms of the guard getting a hand on somebody to help with a combo block. They changed the angles a little bit, and they started to get a bead on what needed to happen, and you started to see Florida State developing what they needed to in the running game, particularly once you got to the fourth quarter, and then Cook broke their back with a couple big runs, as he is prone to do. And you got to give Dalvin Cook a lot of credit for running really hard in this game, despite the fact that Florida was in the backfield for a good portion, for really the first half of this game. He had no room to run. And he got the maximum amount of yardage that was there, fought for it, and just trusted that ultimately those holes would open, and they did later in the game. But, you know, you look at also the miscommunication. I mean, if you want to see a few times, if you go back and you look for a few examples of that, of miscommunication, the second play of the game was an example where there was a miscommunication that led to a tackle for loss. Mavetti and Wilson Bell just completely miscommunicated on who was responsible for whom on that right side, and they let two guys come free. You just can't do that. So that was a play where Dalvin Cook fumbled the handoff anyway. But had Cook gotten that handoff, he still would have been tackled for a loss, most likely, or at worst at the line of scrimmage, because they didn't have the right guy identified in terms of who they needed to block. And like I said, that got better most of the way, particularly in the second half. That started to get a little bit better. Also on the safety, that, you know, the right side slid the wrong direction. I'm not sure what exact protection call that was, whether it was a slide call or what. I don't think it was a slide call, but it appeared to me that the right side was expecting that Bell needed to pull, which they were pulling the guard a lot on protection for some of the moving pocket stuff that they did with Sean McGuire, and it looked to me like Wilson Bell was expecting to pull there. And then he went to pull and then realized, oops, and stopped. And Mavetti was taking Bell's guy on the inside, which is what you would expect to happen on a moving pocket on the pull. And then you could see he recognized, oh no, I've actually got two guys on my side. And he tried to get to the outside guy and he whiffed, and it made him look worse than it actually was athletically in terms of getting beat. But that was just a flat out miscommunication on the protection, where the right side of the line was not operating in sync with the left. And I think, again, that was probably some sort of problem with getting what the mic call was, or maybe they had a two protection scheme on depending on what the front was, and the right side and the left side were not in sync there. And the right side gave up a free rusher basically. And that's where also Sean McGuire's got to be much more aware in the pocket than he was in this game. There were a number of situations where, and I tweeted one example of it, one example of him doing it incorrectly and another example of him doing it correctly. But there were a number of examples in this game where McGuire hit the back of his drop, and he needs to be able to feel where guys are in the pocket, where the pocket is, to be able to slide and climb into the pocket and all that to create a little bit more time. That's something that a better quarterback with a little bit more feel in the pocket actually gives his offensive – he makes his offensive line look better. And there were times in this game where McGuire had the chance to do that, and he just didn't. He stayed at the back of his drop. He sort of floated in the pocket a little bit instead of sliding, and allowed that Florida defense to basically come straight at him on one spot instead of moving around a little bit. This is something that Chris Wienke actually did fantastically well back when he was at Florida State. Something that Jameis Winston did very naturally is, again, sliding and stepping up in the pocket. And it's one of the most important and yet least understood parts of quarterbacking by the fan. It's extremely important aspect, because fans will blame the line when in many cases it's just the quarterback not helping his line by stepping up, sliding a foot or two in one direction or another, and giving himself space to throw that really is there. And you know, because he doesn't do that, it doesn't look like it's there to the casual fan. And there are a number of cases of that. And in this case, on that safety play, which, by the way, I don't have a problem with the play call, given that Florida State was going for the kill shot there, and I have no problem with Jimbo Fisher deciding to do that up that many points at that spot. Go ahead and go for the kill shot. You've got to block it. And anyway, what McGuire's got to recognize is he's got to be able to feel the pressure, and he's got to get that ball out of there, throw it over the head of somebody, and get the ball out quickly. And there were just a number of times where he held onto the ball a beat too long or didn't slide, didn't move. And in that case, you could see he kind of felt him, but then he double-clutched and then decided to try to throw late, and it was too late. You can't double-clutch there. You've just got to go. If you're going to throw it, you just got to throw it and get rid of it. So that again, that's partly on McGuire there. He's got to get rid of that football a little bit better. Now, on the play to Kermit Whitfield, the long play that set up Florida State's first touchdown, that was an example where he actually did hit the back of his drop, felt the pressure a little bit, and then stepped into the pocket, into the void, slid a little bit, and made a quality throw. Had he not done that, that could have been a sack, or he could have, you know, that could have been an easy incompletion because of pressure, simply because he wouldn't have stepped up like he needed to in the pocket. So that's something that, again, McGuire just has not shown me a whole lot to be encouraged about in that regard against quality defenses. And that's the thing that quality defenses do, is that they, when you play against a good defense, the pocket's not always going to be in the same place. You've got to be able to feel your way around where that pocket's going to be and make space, make the throwing window as a quarterback with feel and with and find your comfort level in that against a better defense. And he didn't do that most of this game. But again, he was good enough to win in this game. He didn't do anything that really hurt you if you're Florida State. Now, he did do one thing that really could have hurt Florida State, and that's take that gamble, throwing across his body into the middle of the field on a fourth and goal play from inside the one. Fisher took a gamble and went ahead and called a boot pass there, and he decided to go ahead and throw against the grain, late over the middle, across his body. I mean, that's three strikes if you're a quarterback. You're supposed to do none of the above, and got lucky. Sometimes it's better to be lucky and good, and in that case, it really was. You know, some people are saying, oh, you know, it was a great play. No, it was not. It was a lucky play. It was a fortunate play, but it was a terrible decision. An absolutely horrible decision. If you're the Florida State quarterback, you cannot make that kind of decision. And you hear people say, well, it was fourth down. You know, worst things come to worst. It's a turnover anyway if you don't get it. Yeah, but one of the reasons you go for it on fourth and one there is that if you don't get it, Florida gets it on the one. And Florida's offense is terrible. You've got a better chance of scoring than Florida's offense does there long, you know, over the course of the game. Your expected point value for Florida starting on the one is positive on your side. They're going to punt at best in general. They're going to punt out of there, and you're going to get great field position. Or they turn it over, they get a fumble, you know, they get a safety. Any number of bad things can happen. But if you throw an interception there in the end zone, then they get the ball on the 20 with a touchback, or if it's a bad enough interception and one of their athletic guys gets it and they're going against the grain there, they bring it out of the end zone. They could go 106 yards for a score. And that flips the field. So that is exactly the opposite kind of play that you need to make if you're Sean McGuire there. Run for the pylon, son, and lay out. And if you don't get it, they get it on the one or inside the one. You know, Jameis Winston, I can't tell you how many times, I don't know how many times in his Florida State career, in those cases, he just found he saw that something wasn't there, and instead of throwing across his body, and Winston was a gunslinger too, Winston would take off for that corner and lay out for the end zone. And McGuire might not have made it. Now, here's the thing. If McGuire doesn't make it, then that's an indictment of the athleticism needed to play that position. But like I said, he may not have made it, but I think, first of all, I think he would have. Given who is chasing, given the angles and all that, I've watched it a number of times. I think he makes it. But even if he doesn't, they get the ball inside the one. That's what you're counting on if you're Jimbo Fisher. It's certainly a play that McGuire didn't receive rave reviews from the coaching staff after the game. I'm sure when they got into film session, that was everybody kind of laughing about it, but they're saying don't ever do this again. You got to know situations. You got to not make this kind of decision and put your team in a potentially bad bad spot. A few other quick things. I thought Travis Rudolph was open most of this game. He did a good job getting off of very good coverage from Florida. He was open deep once on a play that should have been a targeting call. Was open deep another time when McGuire made such a bad throw that it you couldn't tell that he was really open until you went back and looked at it. But he was getting free, which is a good sign for next year when Florida State's a little bit better, in a better situation at the quarterback position and at the offensive line spot. So, you know, I think that's encouraging. I thought Kermit Whitfield, again, he also was getting open. I'm very impressed by how much better he's gotten as a wide receiver. And this is a guy that's played through injury this year. A lot of people don't know that, but he's played through injury. And, you know, he got off the line in press coverage against Vernon Hargraves down inside the red zone. Throw was missed, but he was open. This is the sort of thing that, you know, again, you don't necessarily notice because the quarterback play's not all that great. But the receivers, actually, I thought played pretty well. You know, you did have Bobo with the one drop on the over route that, you know, you just can't drop that. But all in all, I thought the wide receivers held their own against Florida's secondary better than I expected. You know, Florida State has smallish receivers and they're not the most physical group. But I think that Rudolph has shown a lot of, Rudolph in particular, and obviously Whitfield in the slot, but Rudolph is an outside wide receiver, and he may play a little bit more inside next year. Rudolph has shown me a good bit in the second half of this season that he's taking a step forward, even if it doesn't necessarily show on the stat sheet. One other thing that I also haven't gotten to yet is on short yardage stuff. Florida State needs to reconsider a couple things that they're doing on short yardage. The one on third and one, or third and goal from the one before the McGuire touchdown, the McGuire to Kerr touchdown. I just don't like the design of what they did there, where basically Kareem R stepped back to try to get an angle on the bubble there. He had a linebacker bubble over top of him, and he needs to. They were trying to get him an angle since it was going to the right. They're trying to get him a little bit of an angle by having him bucket step, which is a slight step back for the offensive lineman, and then coming forward to try to get an angle on that linebacker. But when the linebacker comes hard downhill there, then it's stepping back there actually makes it tougher. I would really like to just see Florida State in those cases, and I think this is something we'll see next year after they've self-scouted a little bit in the offseason here. I think we'll probably even see this in the bowl game. I think in those fourth and or third and one situations, you just let your guards fire out a little bit. Just tell them to do so under control. And if he takes that linebacker on in the hole, Dalvin Cook scores. But the linebacker is able to cross his face because he stepped back and wasn't quick enough to get back into position. If the linebacker comes downhill hard enough and on third and one, he's probably going to do that. You wind up not being able to get the angle on him. So that's just a minor complaint there. I thought that, you know, some of the other calls on short yardage were very good, particularly the one on fourth and one late that Dalvin Cook scored on. That's actually the play that I would have liked to have seen them run against Clemson in the fourth and one situation where Dalvin Cook got stopped short. That's the play that I would have preferred, that little fake belly to the fullback and then the pitch out to Cook to let him use his speed on the edge. And in this case, Florida completely bit the bit on the inside action and Cook went free for an easy touchdown, which was nice to see. And I'm sure that no Florida State fan out there is begrudging Jimbo Fisher, you know, adding one more late score there. So you know, Dalvin Cook over 180 yards for that game, which is, I mean, again, it's remarkable how Dalvin Cook has played this year, to the point where, you know, he averaged 7 yards a carry in this game, and his season average went down yards per carry. His season average was hurt by this game, despite going for 26 carries, 183 yards, averaging 7.0 a carry and 2 touchdowns. That's a pretty good stat line, a better stat line than Leonard Fournette put up against this same Florida defense. So worth noting. Other notes from this game, the sooner Levante Taylor gets onto campus as the punt returner, the better. Generally speaking, punt returners are supposed to be scary, but they're not supposed to scare their own fans and their own team every time the ball goes up into the air. And you're just saying, please, God, please let him catch it. But Levante Taylor should be just what the doctor orders at that position, should be instant day one starter there. And I think Nooney, Nyquan Murray is probably going to be the backup there. If he doesn't, you know, start a couple games while Taylor gets his sea legs about him there. But I think Taylor's probably the day one starter at punt return and should make Florida State a lot scarier in that regard, in that part of the game where they've just not been very good this year. So anyway, there's been a lot to talk about in breaking down a game that every Florida State fan out there is very pleased to have behind them. It's a game that, you know, a month and a half ago, a lot of Florida State fans were very wary about, that they thought that Florida might not just beat them, but beat them pretty heavily, beat them badly. I never was in that camp. I thought that Florida State matched up well with this Florida team, although it would have been a very different game with Will Grier at quarterback. Either way, Florida State beats rival Florida 27-2, yet another state championship for the Seminoles. And in this year, actually three wins over the next three best in-state programs, with the win over South Florida as well. 27-2 over Florida. That'll do it for us today. Once again, this has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. Again, you can find me on Twitter at Doc Staples. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast through to iTunes or your podcast manager of choice. You can find the Seminole Sports Radio app on iTunes or the Android Marketplace. And of course, rate our podcast on Twitter and tell a friend. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. I'm Jason Staples. Thanks for listening. I made this.